This is a HeadGum Original.
But that's the problem. You can't know when to hold them, and you can't know when to fold them.
But you can know when to cold open the show.
No, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't say it.
It's happening right now. It's Punch Up the Jam.
Let's punch it.
Punch up the jam. Punch it up.
Kenny Rogers, The Gambler, Evan. It's a song that has almost transcended music and just passed into lore. And this week, that's what we're talking about.
I want to know, I guess I need to just conduct the opening of this episode as an interview. I want to interview you about why you were so insistent that we bring this song to the podcast. Why is it that you wanted to punch up The Gambler?
Honestly, right now, I am mystified because I thought you picked The Gambler to punch up. You and I have had a running list of songs we were going to punch up. We've been adding to this list since July. You know, just like, okay, like, oh, we really want to do a song that is on the list that I really want to do is Country Roads. But we feel like we've got to get a guest from West Virginia. Mm-hmm, we're very qualified to talk about Country Roads because we're almost from West Virginia.
Mm-hmm. We're close.
We need a true West Virginia to talk about Country Roads. And there's a lot of other great songs on the list that are not coming to mind immediately. But The Gambler was on the list, and I was 100% sure that you put it on. Do you deny this?
No, I don't know. I've put so many songs on the potential list. I don't remember. They've all receded into a haze. I guess I could have put The Gambler on our list because I'm a professional poker player.
Really?
Yeah, but not the game. I play the fireplace tool, the poker, as a musical instrument.
Oh.
I take pokers from, like, when I'm at an Airbnb and they have a fireplace and they have the little metal shovel that you use for, I don't know what it's for actually, I think maybe picking up tiny logs. They have the little metal shovel and giant metal tongs that you can sort of, like, you know, chase your other Airbnb guest friends around with, like flirting. And they also have a poker. And I play that as a musical instrument by banging it on hard things.
Kind of like when you see on the New York City subway, someone, every once in a while, you'll get like a saw player, someone who's bending a saw to create different notes. But
you can at least create different notes. The thing about playing the poker is there is only one note.
You're
it just
clanging.
Sounds like bang.
You're clanging.
Yeah.
Man, I didn't know you put The Gambler on this list, nor did I know that you were a professional poker player. I'm learning a lot about my brother today.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just scanning the list, just trying to figure out what song I could punch it by myself. I wanted to surprise you with a song, Evan, blitz you with a song. We've been doing the show a little differently than Demi and Miel used to do it. They would come to a show with the song already done, and we've been talking to a guest, going away for a couple weeks, coming back with the song, getting reaction. But if it's just the two of us, we don't have to listen to a guest. We can just do whatever we want. We can show up with the song. From now on, we're calling it a Blitz episode.
I like Blitz episode because it sounds like you're tackling me with a song, but maybe we could make it less aggressive and it could just be a fast break episode.
Okay, so
it's
like,
you did it so fast.
Well, but for a fast break, I think there need to be two players. You know, one of us has to be passing, one of us has to be dunking, and this is me just running out of the backfield and tackling you.
What about calling it a double play episode?
Well, I'm too concerned that our listeners will get it mixed up with getting to first base, getting to second base, etc. Think we're talking about sex stuff.
Maybe I am talking about sex stuff.
It's a Blitz episode. I picked this song because I was pretty sure I didn't put it on. I guess I could be wrong. Now we're just kind of spiraling into the mystery of The Gambler, which I guess is appropriate for a song that's crossed over from the realm of music to the realm of lore.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that this song has attained a mythical status.
And also just granted mythical status to Kenny Rogers. I mean, Kenny Rogers had a successful musical career before The Gambler came out. But when you think of Kenny Rogers, obviously the first thing you think of is his roasted
chicken.
Yes,
yeah.
You think of his chicken. But then you think of The Gambler. You think of his gray beard and his gray hair. And like this song, like, absolutely shifted his career. He'd bounced around, done all these different things. He'd been in all these different bands, which I didn't know. He does The Gambler, and then all of a sudden, the entire 1980s, he spent making TV movies based on a song called The Gambler. Yeah, it's crazy.
Okay, like, I don't know anything about Kenny Rogers' history, so we're going to have to get into it. I basically know this song, and I don't know, I could maybe think of one other. What's the one that's like...
Well, later on, he did Islands in the Stream, the duet with Dolly Parton,
okay,
which was written by the Bee Gees, which is amazing. But early on in his career, he was playing bass in a jazz trio. Then he played in a group called the New Christy Minstrels that would have like 20 members at a time and cycle through all these members that as I was reading about them, I was like, this is 100% the group that the folk group is based on in A Mighty Wind.
Yes, I think that's explicit. I don't know anything about the New Christy Minstrels other than they have a rotating cast. And that's the kind of thing where like basically you can keep the artists from ever getting paid because you're a mogul that put the group together.
Yeah.
And you can get these kids in and out of there like menudo.
So Kenny Rogers is singing in that group. He's playing the bass. He's a bass player. What? But he quits the New Christy Minstrel Singers because he's unsatisfied with a couple of his co-Christies, creates a new band. It sounds like an 80s boy band, but it's not.
Because he got too big for the New Christy Minstrels britches. He went to the mogul and said, I need my own spotlight. And the mogul said,
ain't nobody coming to see you, Otis.
Exactly. So they leave, and they basically create a psychedelic rock band. Did you know that Kenny Rogers was in a psychedelic rock band?
What's the name of it?
They're called The First Edition, which
yes, I've heard of
like,
The First Edition.
It sounds like a boy band from the 80s.
Okay, I've heard of this. And this is the song I think I've heard. It's like, Lucy, don't take your love to town.
Did you just make that up?
No.
You made that up.
No, this is a real song.
And my pop quiz for you, from the First Edition, as longtime listeners to our podcast might know, if you were able to tell me the answer to this question, I will Venmo you $5.
Oh,
I'm
going to
Venmo you $5 if you can answer this question. Which song from the soundtrack to The Big Lebowski?
I hate this segment, the quizzing segment. And
Kenny
being on the
Rogers
spot.
Singing. You get $5 if you can tell me on your first guess.
Okay.
What song is Kenny Rogers singing on the Big Lebowski soundtrack?
On the Big Lebowski.
And meanwhile, I've snuck this into the soundboard under Lebowski Mystery. So
okay, this one I know. This one I know because I am from that segment of the population that loves the Big Lebowski.
This is a very, very tiny slice of people.
Yeah, everyone else hates the Big Lebowski except for me and my nerd friends. Okay.
What a nerd. I'm just such a nerd.
It's
I just
one
love
of the,
comic books.
It's one of the hallucination,
Lebowski.
You know, montage. It's one of the hallucination sections of the movie, and the song is Condition. Whoa, 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 what condition? My condition was
yes,
in.
It's for the very first time I have to Venmo you
yes!
$5.
I did it! I've lost this segment every single time. Oh, the backward sitar. This might be a George Harrison track.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Come on, this track is freaking, that's an awesome track.
I never would have guessed. So that was Kenny Rogers. I thought Kenny Rogers was like frozen in time as The Gambler, but little did I know he'd been a jazz bassist, a weird like folk revival guy, and a psychedelic rocker by the time he quit to become like a solo country star.
Well, he's also frozen in time by being a man with the first name Kenny. It's hard to transcend the country genre or to transcend your brand as country artist if your name is Kenny. I'm just going to say it.
I did say it. He's like, you know what? And he's also, if you don't know what Kenny Rogers looks like, he's also frozen in time as a man who looks exactly like Santa Claus. You know, especially like 1978 Kenny Rogers. Like somehow he's only 40 years old, but he just looks like the platonic ideal of like a handsome Santa Claus. Not a fat Santa Claus, but like, it's kind of an oxymoron, not a fat Santa Claus, but he...
I can't believe you're shaming Santa Claus like that. Santa Claus is already extremely handsome, but yeah, Kenny Rogers is Santa Claus who did a little bit of grooming in 1981. I'm glad you mentioned that he Island in the Stream, his later hit, was penned by the Bee Gees. I didn't know that, but just thinking about how Kenny Rogers looks, it's got strong Bee Gees energy. The feathered hair, the wistful look.
He looks like the Bee Gees uncle.
Yeah,
like they're like a cool uncle. So Kenny Rogers had bounced around a little bit by the time The Gambler comes out, but not unlike Kenny Rogers, the song The Gambler has bounced around a lot too. And that's like, to me, like the ultimate Nashville thing that you hear about a Nashville hit song. That like this song had come out and like people had chattered about it and someone had recorded it, but like it wasn't the single. And then the songwriter puts it out. And this is the third or fourth version of it that comes out. And weirdly, one of the reasons it like survives at all, the first person who records it is convinced to record it not by the songwriter, but by his close friend, Shel Silverstein. Which is hilarious to me. Like, Shel Silverstein, the author of, like, The Giving Tree and, like, the author of all the kids' books, who also has, like, this insane career as a songwriter and most famously wrote Johnny Cash's A Boy Named Sue. Like, this totally makes sense to me as something that Shel Silverstein would hear and, like, just grab his friend by the lapels and shake him and be like, you gotta record this song. When we get into The Gambler, it's just like it's almost like a short story. So it makes sense to me that Shel Silverstein would be, like I said, grabbing his friend by the lapels.
Yes, this the song is a short story. The song is a narrative that also imparts an extremely treacly moral, just like The Giving Tree.
Take that back. Take that back. It's not a treacly moral.
I'm not saying The Giving Tree is wrong. The Giving Tree is right and will make me cry every time I read it as a grown man.
You're a man who, unlike me, has not spent the last week of his life reading the YouTube comments on Kenny Rogers the Gambler, and every single comment is like, never understood this when I was 12 years old. Now that I'm an old man, I know what it really meant. Thanks, Kenny.
Well, I guess that's what I want to get into, because I've heard this song 100 times, you know, on the radio or in bars, and I still don't know what specifically it's telling me
really?
To do with my life.
Really? I don't think it takes that deep of a read.
Well, let's get into it.
Let's get into it. So this is the third or fourth time it's been recorded. Johnny Cash even put it out in the same year, but hated the song, like got in an argument with his producer. And apparently Kenny Rogers just like loved this song and just like got into it deep with his producer. He added in all these musical elements that really elevated the song, and the rest is history. Let's hear the song.
On a warm summer's evening, on a train bound for nowhere, I met up with a gambler. We were both too tired to sleep.
Okay, pause it for a second.
Okay.
Just a couple things about the vocal performance. The vocal performance is so insanely good. It's so warm and so round, and it's so melodic. Yet it's simultaneously so conversational.
Yeah.
It's like so beautiful, but it sounds like he's just like tossing it off so impossibly casually, but it's so beautiful. But the other thing that as I listened to this over and over again, blew my mind is, do you remember like 5 or 6 years ago when there was like a national panic about 20-year-old women talking with vocal fry?
Yes.
And it was like, women are talking with vocal fry. This is terrible. And like NPR would play recordings of women being like, so anyway. And everyone was really worked up about it. Play the first line of this song again.
Yes, I know. Yes, that's the first thing I thought of too.
On a warm summer's evening, on a train bound for nowhere.
There's so much like vocal fry in it. It's insane. But I love it. But did Kenny Rogers invent vocal fry?
No, he didn't invent it, but 100% he's doing this on purpose. I mean, it's a genius move. I mean, his voice sounds great when he's actually on the pitch singing somewhat later. But just that first line, he 100% knows what he's doing. On a warm summer's evening. Because it sounds emotional. Like, no vocal coach would ever tell you to do that. Fry your voice instead of singing a note. Don't sing the note, Kenny. But that's what he did because it feels emotional. It draws you in.
The amount of effort to make this sound so casual and the amount of expertise is so gargantuan. The other moment in just the first two lines that really crushes me is, on a train bound for nowhere. Like, if you listen to nowhere, like, just play the word nowhere. Like, the where is, like, not there.
On a train bound for nowhere.
It's just like, it's so
The vocal is just unbelievable. I'm in love with it.
The memory of being on that train going to nowhere has just struck Kenny as he's singing. It's so emotional that he can't bring himself to completely utter the word. So he met up with the gambler, it says. That sort of implies they know each other, but I think it's pretty clear they don't.
Yeah, they're just strangers. Just strangers on a train.
And then to complete that couplet, we were both too tired to sleep. Wow. To me, I'm sorry, I'm going to come out like a cynic here, but like that's just like extreme middle school poetry to me.
I mean, what I desperately want is a boomer to share a meme about what trains used to be like before smartphones. And the answer is not everyone was looking at their smartphones. People were talking to gamblers about what life was like.
Mm-hmm. With a gambler, we were both too tired to sleep. Mm. So we took turns of staring out the window at the darkness till boredom overtook us and he began to speak. He said,
I cannot parse each line with this level of granularity, but there is something really funny to me that they took turns staring out the window. It is the nature of windows that both of you could stare out at the same time. There really is no need to take turns. You really could both use the window at the same time. The window is clear no matter how many eyes are a-gazing through it.
Maybe they're in a sleeper, they're straight in the top bunk and bottom bunk. That's not happening.
My last comment is this last line. The boredom overtook us and he began to speak. I do find that extremely hashtag relatable. Just the number of times that you're in a room and just because another human is there, like you literally have nothing to talk about, but this sensation arises within you, the obligation to break the silence with like, so, waiting in line at the post office to mail a package, huh?
Yeah, and this verse has just perfectly captured that, like, is this 30 minutes? Is this an hour? Is this 3 days they're on the train? It's really put us in this, like, this almost like fantasy Wild West zone. I love it.
Son, I've made a life.
Oh, there's the bass. There's the bass and the drums.
Bass dropped in.
Knowing what the cards were by the way they held their eyes. So if you don't mind my saying, I can see you're out of aces. For a taste of your whiskey, I'll give you some advice.
I love these kind of like poppy percussion noises. They're very 70s.
They have three long stanzas before they ever get to a hook. So to make it musically interesting, they can only add one little drip of an instrument at a time. They don't even give us the full drum set here. It's just like Bob the drummer is in the back and they're like, Bob, don't give us any drums. Just click it on the rim a little bit. You can come in, but just the clicks. He's like, clickety, click, clickety, click, click. Didn't hit a single drum.
He's like flicking the side of his mouth or something to get like a pop or something.
Yeah, he's doing one of those balloon pops. The other thing I love here is that this gambler is so cartoonish. He can't say a single sentence without it being about cards. Son, I made a life out of knowing what the cards were. And I could see you're out of aces.
I mean, you're talking about how we're dripping instruments in the arrangement to make it bigger and bigger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the first verse is all about like being alone, traveling, hashtag religion major, being in a liminal space. And quick flashback as we're adding in all these instruments on the second verse. One thing I forgot to say about the first verse that I think is amazing is when you have those two characters, Kenny Rogers and the gambler in that train car, you just have two instruments in the first verse. These two guitars playing like this beautiful duet. But verse two, we're getting like, the cards, how they hold their eyes. We aren't into the iconic chorus yet that's all about card playing, but we're like dripping more and more gambling stuff into the lyrics.
Mm-hmm. As soon as the gambler spoke, we got more instruments. The ensemble is growing. Now, let's see. For a taste of your whiskey, he's an alcoholic, I'll give you some advice. Let's see what's going to happen.
So I handed him my bottle, and he drank down my last swallow.
Not cool, gambler.
Real quick. I just want to say the best two genres for slant rhyming, Broadway musicals, country songs. That's an all-timer for me, slant rhyme. Bottle, swaller. It's like kind of a rhyme, the way Kenny Rogers.
Was that supposed to be a rhyme?
I don't know.
I don't think the first and second lines in the previous couple stanzas rhymed, just in terms of like what their scheme is here. But I like that you heard it as a
they
rhyme. I'm just
going to
skip
it
back. Let me skip it back so I can experience this the same way you did.
So I handed him my bottle, and he drank down my last swallow. Then he bummed a cigarette.
I don't buy it, but I'm glad you heard it. Took his last swallow and bummed a cig.
And his face lost all expression. Said, if you're gonna play the game, boy, you gotta learn to play it right.
Okay.
The game of what, Evan?
The game of what?
The game of what? The game of poker?
Or I dare say it. I dare say it out loud. It? The game of life.
It is. It's. I think we're talking about the game of life here.
Oh.
You know, poking around on the internet, there's only one song we've ever done that has a whole article written about it in Psychology Today about the true meaning of the in the true depth of a song. Somehow it's this song because it's about the game of life.
Should I do it? Should I play the hook?
You got to know.
Okay, there's the whole drums.
The band's
know
in.
Know when to fold up. Know when to walk away. Know when to run. You never count your money. When you're sitting at the table, there'll be time enough for counting. When the dealing's done.
Oh, you just can't help but sing along. It's so good. The rhyme scheme, hold 'em, fold 'em, the double rhyme is just absolutely perfect.
Yep.
And the lessons for life, even more perfect.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, listening to it now, it's extremely country. The sound of the song is very country, and yet, I don't know, I can just think of people singing along to this, and it does transcend somewhat the country genre, the way this song draws people in. So let's analyze the chorus a little bit, and then we don't have much of the song left, honestly, because what we have after this is the second verse, and then I think they do the chorus three times. You got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them. Okay.
Okay, so for those of you, maybe some of you guys haven't played poker out there, if you're holding your cards, you're playing them. You're playing this hand. If you're folding, you're quitting.
And you just know that your hand is bad.
You know your hand is bad, so you quit. And
what the man is describing here is the utter basics of playing poker. Sometimes you place a bet and say, I think I can win. And sometimes you don't place a bet and you say, I think I will lose this. That's called folding. The man has just described playing poker. Yeah. I guess I'm cynically saying this is not advice. This is not advice.
This is page one.
This is page one of the instruction manual on Parker Brothers Play at Home Poker. This is not real advice. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I see where you're coming from. Because really, we'll get there. I find the deepest piece of gambling advice and deepest piece of life advice to still be in front of us in the next verse. But you're right that here, like, you know, people see this as being such a deep song about life. But this is the rules of poker. That you either hold them or fold them. Well, not walking and running away. That doesn't have anything to do with poker.
Know when to walk away versus knowing when to run. What's that about? That means, oh, you're just leaving the poker game, or you transgressed and someone is going to shoot you. That's what's implied here, right? You're running away because...
It could be about being shot. It could also be about just like either knowing when you've won enough that your night is over, or when you've lost enough that your night is over.
I guess my main question is about the back half of the course. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. This part begins to intrigue me because it's not immediately evident why I wouldn't count my money. The whole game is betting, winning a little bit, losing a little bit, and you know, you pretty much want to know how much you have at all times to decide whether or not to quit or bet.
That's why
more.
Chips exist, so you don't have to count your money. So it's very, very fast to add up your chips, right?
The lyric is, there'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done. So I took the liberty to reach out to Amir Blumenfeld, one of the headgummers at HeadGum, who I know plays in a weekly poker game, which is, you know, about 100 times more poker than I've ever played. And I asked him, what is this line about? I don't even really know what wisdom is being imparted to me. To me, it sounds a little bit like I'm being threatened. Like, don't count your money. Like, that's it's a manners thing. It's rude to count your money like you think the dealer's put one over on you or something that could offend him and inevitably end in a saloon gunfight.
I thought it was a murder thing. Yeah, like, if you're counting your money, someone could be like, wow, while he's counting his money, I was able to count his money, and he has so much money that I won his money, so I'll kill him for his money. That's what I assumed. Mm-hmm. Well, what did Amir say?
Yeah, I mean, you and I are both coming from a similar place, which is that all gambling ends in murdering.
Yes, and all of our gambling experience has to do with watching people do it in Westerns.
Yes. Everything I am describing, I'm picturing in my head, Yosemite Sam. And Amir replied and said he thinks it's psychological. He didn't think it was about murdering or gunplay or people getting offended. I also think that if you're playing poker in the back of saloon, you're at risk of offending anyone at any moment, and that also results in gunshots. But Amir said it was more likely about psyching yourself out. Oh, if you spend a lot of time counting your own chips, then you're going to psych yourself out and play different. And you just want to keep playing your strategy. Like, you've got your strategy. Play your strategy no matter how the winds are changing. If you, no matter if you're up or down, you stick with the strategy. Now I sound like I'm on the subreddit Wall Street Bets. But anyway, that's a very different interpretation.
Okay.
That's a non-gunplay interpretation. It's a psychology interpretation.
So now are you thinking that Kenny Rogers is really good at gambling now that you heard Amir's explanation? Now are you like, wow, this isn't poker 101 at all. This is a guy who really knows his poker.
Every gamble
oh!
knows
oh, the
secret
chain.
To surviving is knowing what to throw away, knowing what to keep. Cause every hand's
no
a
one does a modulation on the verse.
Every
it's always
loser,
on the repeat chorus.
And the best that you can hope for is to die.
I love that. It was a sick surprise.
And when also, that modulation, if you pause, Devin.
Yeah.
That modulation, there's like no build up to it. There's like no warning. Like there's no like extra beats. It's just like chorus, chorus, yeah. verse. And he's singing right at the top of it. And one interesting thing about that key change is it seems so obvious now, right? We're looking back at The Gambler. We're just like, oh, the stakes are, there's this cinematic song by Kenny Rogers. Of course he did this key change. But actually the songwriter of the song, Don Schlitz, really credited the key change for like making Kenny Rogers' version pop. Like Kenny Rogers and the producer in the studio were like, what if there was a key change? And Don Schlitz was like, nobody had ever thought of that before.
This'll really make him sit up. You go up a half step on the verse.
Out of nowhere. Don Schlitz, I was reading more about him. I mean, he just has an insane career. I thought I was going to talk more about him because who else do you know of that has been commissioned to write a country song by George H.W. Bush? Nobody. The list is Don Schlitz and nobody else. But as I was like digging into his hits a little bit, I was just like, oh, wow, this guy wrote a lot of hits. He wrote 24 hits. I uncovered something, Evan, that I fear might blow the top off the music industry. And I'm kind of concerned that it might turn our podcast from a music and comedy podcast into a true crime podcast.
What are you talking about?
That's right, Evan. This is a true crime podcast now. Because I read this on Wikipedia and I was like, certainly this cannot be true. I'm not going to be one of those podcast hosts that's always reading Wikipedia, repeating facts from Wikipedia. But I got to dig into this one fact. It cannot be true. I did a little further research, as much as 10 minutes of further research. And as far as I can tell, I mean, this is impossible. It can't be true. But the song, The Gambler, by Kenny Rogers, has never been certified gold by the RIAA.
That's the true crime you wanted to tell me about? It is a crime.
It's a crime. Who is falling down on the job that this is not a certified record? This is like 400 million streams between Spotify and YouTube. I'm just befuddled, bewildered.
So you're saying Kenny Rogers is sitting at home?
Well, he's dead.
He is?
Kenny Rogers is dead.
Kenny Rogers is dead?
He was dead. I told you this is a true crime podcast.
I can't believe I'm learning about this recording an episode. I don't know the most basic fact about this man.
Yeah, Kenny Rogers is dead.
I thought he'd live forever eating rotisserie chicken. Wow, I'm truly
flabbergasted. So for you, you're like, you're, but for you, this is not as much of a shock to me that a song could have racked up this many views and plays and buys and not be certified. For me, it's like there's just some accountant at Universal Music Group who is just like fallen down on the job and somehow failed to certify this song that should be many times platinum.
Okay, so between Spotify and YouTube, you can see that this song has 400 million streams. Just for our audience's benefit, we have gone through the certification process before, and back of the napkin, you can say 150 million streams means the thing has probably gone
gold. Yes, our credentials. We have 3 gold records to our name, and we had to do the math ourselves.
You're just using this chance to do a not-so-sneaky brag, but the point stands that somebody at Kenny Rogers' record label should have been doing this.
Thank you. Mostly it makes me wonder, is this just like sheer negligence on the part of his record label that they're just like, well, why even bother? Or they didn't even notice? Or is it some sort of a shell game where they're like, telling Kenny Rogers and his family the gambler isn't making me money, like the crazy Hollywood statistics you see where like Men in Black lost money according to the studio.
Okay, you're right. The fact that an iconic song of this nature that everyone knows has been streamed a gazillion times and presumably sold a bajillion copies back when it came out in the 1970s.
And it hit number one in the Billboard chart the week Kenny Rogers died.
Really? Like, this is a number one song?
Well, yeah, it was a number one song, and it hit number one on the sales chart, which makes sense in the year 2020. He just died last year. That, like, the people who would be going to listen to Kenny Rogers that week aren't people who are into Spotify to stream it. They're people of the age that are like, I'd better go buy that song on iTunes.
I see. So it got a nostalgia bump.
Got a nostalgia bump that you think just seems like it should be gold by now. And I hope you guys all enjoy listening to our podcast spinoff next season, which will be exactly like Serial, except trying to figure out why Kenny Rogers the Gambler is not certified gold.
This is going to be a great white collar true crime podcast as we phone junior accountants at a record label to see basically who forgot to sort their spreadsheet in order of sales.
Okay, but enough about Law and Order. Back to the Gambler. Last verse.
Crushed out a cigarette, faded off to sleep, and somewhere in the darkness, the gambler, he broke even. But in his final words, I found an ace that I
what?
Keep.
Wait a minute.
You got.
Did he just die?
The gambler.
In the song?
They killed the gambler in the song.
Did he just die mid-verse?
Yeah. Yeah, they killed him.
I don't think I ever noticed that in this song.
Okay. I feel like they got to the end of the song and they were just kind of like, how do we wrap this up? And they were just like, it's cinematic, death!
He died! So the gambler is talking, if you're going to play the game, you got to learn to play it right. Then he gets into his maxims, his idioms, his aphorisms. You got to know when to hold him, know when to fold him. That's the catchiest bit. That's the chorus that everybody knows. But then it comes back to the verse. He's actually still talking.
Yeah.
The crowbar modulation happened. We're in a new key, so you might not have noticed that it actually was still the gambler talking. And he's like, the secret to surviving is knowing what to throw away and knowing what to keep, just sort of reiterating his main point. Every hand's a winner and every hand's a loser. Interesting. Got my attention. And then he finishes with, and the best that you can hope for is to die in your sleep.
Which he
does. The last thing. That's literally the last thing he says. Then he continues on to say, and when he'd finished speaking, he turned back toward the window and faded off to sleep. So his last words were, die in your sleep. Then he died in his sleep in this song.
I guess I always read it. Are you reading it that he literally dies in his sleep, like right after he talks to Kenny Rogers? I'm kind of reading it as like Kenny Rogers is recounting this story 20 or 30 years later. And in the intervening 20 or 30 years later, the gambler has faded off to sleep and died, but
I don't think he's eliding across history that the gambler died at some point. It says, I'm just reading the lyrics back to you here.
You think the Pullman
somewhere
porters
in the darkness, the gambler, he broke even. Somewhere in the darkness is referring to that night that they're experiencing together on this overnight train to nowhere.
You think the Pullman porters are like coming down the hall to like pull the gambler's stiff body down the train and just like throw him off at a whistle stop, basically?
Yes, 100%.
No,
I mean, the song does not get into what funeral home they used, who had to hire the mortician. We've just concluded with somewhere in the darkness, the gambler, he broke even. But in his final words, we've declared that these were his final words. I found an ace that I could keep. So the gambler has infected Kenny Rogers with this disease in which everything you say is talking about cards. Kenny Rogers caught the bug.
But you know what? I was mourning the gambler here for a second, but he just told us one verse ago, this is his dream. This is what he wanted. He wants to die in his sleep. This is great news for him.
Now, I will say the line that really stands out to me as being like truly great life advice that I really bought into after reading all these YouTube comments talking about how this is the song that truly taught them how to live as men and women.
Yeah, you were sold.
Is it every hand's a winner and every hand's a loser?
Yes.
Just like some on any given day, you could do the exact same thing. And then on one day, it's the perfect thing to do. Mm. And another day, it's the worst thing you can do. I truly do find that sentiment to be deep and meaningful. And Don Schlitz, this one's for you for that one.
Yeah, every hand's a winner and every hand's a loser. I think that is a brilliant piece of wisdom, but also feels sort of like Tony Robbins-y. You know, like it all depends on what you make of it. Use your energy to achieve, to motivate, to produce.
Yeah, I guess I read it more as being about like bluffing in poker, right? Like if you have the worst hand in poker, just like if you give your opponent the right look, you can make them win. And if you've got the best hand in poker, well, guess what? There was an even better hand out there and the guy wasn't bluffing. You still lost. He's just, wow. I've just really bought into these YouTube comments. Spin up this last chorus though, Evan.
Okay, here we go. Well, you call it the last chorus. You think it's the...
Oh, man.
And the chorus. It feels like the end of the song. Know when to
walk away. The chorus of people has just expanded. It's like a whole saloon of gamblers singing now.
That's true. The band has grown again. The backup singer showed up. The backup singer's getting paid on this chorus. You got to know. Oh, just... Oh, okay. Know when to fold up. A repeat chorus, the sentimental version. Band dropped out, we're just singing it out. When you're sitting at the
table, there'll be time enough for counting. Well, I feel like when the TV pause it for a second.
How about one more? How about a triple chorus?
All those echoes from, I feel like Kenny Rogers is flashing back a little bit to his psychedelic rock days where like instead of this like casual, like, I don't know, kind of grumbly bear singer, he has on the wind to fold 'em. He does like this like little like rock lick downwards. It's sort of like, oh, Kenny's I am not left-handed in the Princess Bride thing.
Like he was just really feeling it and had to bust out an ad lib.
Yeah, it's kind of like all of a sudden, 1978, Kenny Rogers is gone and the first edition, Kenny Rogers is back just to sing that backup lick.
You know, you're in the studio and somebody sitting in the producer's chair says, you know, I think we could use a double chorus on this one. It just feels good. Let's do a double chorus. Maybe cut out the band and let the vocals shine here. Let the harmonies just ring out. You know, we get the feels. And then all of a sudden, Kenny Rogers turns back around and he says, I'll see your two choruses and I'll raise you a third.
It's a poker joke. No when to fold up. I caught the bug from here on out.
Juicy bass. Singing the juicy bass on this. When you're sitting at the table, there'll be
time enough to count when the deal is done. Ooh, that little syncopation at the end. When the deal is done. What is that? What is that bass singing? Hold your money when you're sitting at the table.
Yeah.
Is that like an F?
That Nashville backup singer.
Yeah, it's just,
that's an E. We're in the key of E here.
Yeah.
When the dealing's done.
It's so low.
Yep. Well, you know, they started the song pretty sparse. Not much going on. They crept in with the drums. The bass didn't hit until the chorus. But by the time you got to the end of this triple chorus here at the end, I think you could say they're playing with a full house.
I will just say that once the saloon chorus comes in of like the bass and like the lady, and you've got like the 1970s psychedelic rock Kenny Rogers. Before that comes in, there's no way this is being made into five 1980s TV movies. But once you hear the whole like cast of characters like almost like clanking through the saloon doors, it's like as a TV movie producer, you can just see it in your mind's eye. You're like, all these characters, gambling, boozing, whoring. I can make five TV movies out of this.
And there won't be a single swear word in the whole thing.
It'll be all life advice from wholesome characters with crusty mustaches.
Now, I will say you have the saloon choir. You've got like all these old-timey drum noises. You've got this very old-timey like doubled guitar. One thing that has really made this song live for me is how frozen in time it is. Like this song to me, like if you had to put, if you were that TV producer and you were saying like, what year is this movie set in? I feel like you hear the song, you already know like 1885.
Exactly like Back to the Future Part 3.
Every character
could be in the same saloon.
Yes. Every character in this movie has PTSD from the Civil War, but because it's a TV movie, they're happy about it.
Yes.
Okay. And that's, I think it's obviously it works for Kenny Rogers. The proof is in the pudding, except obviously it hasn't been certified as a gold record. But the one thing that I kind of wonder about is, you know, if this song came out in the year 2021, mm-hmm. are you like, where, like, is it set in the 1950s now? Are we dealing with a bunch of World War II veterans who have PTSD? Is it, or is this just locked in time forever? Has it crossed over, like we said, from music to lore, and it's just 1885 forever, Evan?
That's interesting. I think the Western style, the Western genre in movies and TV, and that's what this song is depicting, that has been frozen in time. There's this idealized version of what the Wild West was like. I think it's almost entirely fiction, but the depiction of what that Wild West is has been frozen in time. So even if you were to re-record this song today, it feels like to me you're still setting the action in 1885.
No, that's a sharp point, that this song is almost less a song from the world of country music and almost more a song from the world of our imagination of the Wild West through movies and television.
Exactly. It feels like this is from the TV show The Lone Ranger or some like really, you know, whitewashed 50s version of the Wild West, you know, a TV Western. That's what the song feels like to me. But I see what you're getting at, that just like imagining it as more of like a country song of its time. What happens if we re-record it now?
Yeah. So as I was thinking about the punch-up, which as we discussed previously in the episode, we got a blitzed punch-up this week. And you're about to find out that this punch-up is blitzed in more ways than one. This punch-up, I wanted to think about, what would the gambler say now? What you know, we have this gambler who, he and Kenny Rogers are trapped, are frozen forever in the amber behind that train window
mm-hmm.
in the year 1885. You know, Kenny Rogers is looking back 90 years from mm-hmm. 1975. In the year 2021, when you sit down next to the gambler, what does the gambler say? So right after the break, we will be back with Kenny Rogers the Gambler 2021.
It's a great time for me to take a bathroom break and conclude with a royal flush.
We are back.
Okay, I'm super excited about this. I haven't seen a thing.
And as you may recall, it's time for us to play the punch-up of the gambler. What would Kenny Rogers say in 2021? And also, how would he say it?
Okay, hit me with it, Andrew.
On a cool November morning, on a Discord server somewhere, I met up with a gambler. We couldn't sleep, we were too hype, so we took turns staring at the box scores in the darkness, till boredom overtook us. An ADM he typed, he said, bro, I made a life out of sabermetric sleuthing, knowing what the stats were.
Even in 2021, boredom can still overtake
you. So if you don't mind my saying, I can see your stash is wasting. If you send me a Dogecoin, I'll give you some advice. So I zipped one to his wallet. He accepted that deposit. He opened up the voice chat, asked me to mute my mic. Could hear his breathing through his headset. His voice had no affectation. If you're playing fantasy football, you gotta learn to play it right. You gotta know how to draft them. Know how to craft them into a team.
I love just the sidebar. The track is killing me too. Run, it sounds just like a Zach Brown or Luke Bryan track. I don't know.
It's a hamstring, so he's questionable till the season's done. Everyone knows the secret to a head-to-head is your QB, don't throw it away. Good kicker for your special teams. You think your wideout is a winner until your wideout is a loser. When the cornerback you're playing is all-pro Jalen Ramsey. And when he finished speaking, I could hear his toaster dinging. He muted his headset, typed later peace. But somewhere in the darkness, he crunched on eight Totinos. And in his final words, I knew just how to win my league. You gotta know how to draft them. Know how to craft them. Do a team, trade them all.
Yes.
Know how to craft them.
How to craft them.
Into a team, trade them all away. And know when the running back's on the DL. Up on the massage table.
Just as catchy as the original.
It's a hamstring, so he's questionable. Until the season's done.
Another one. We kept in the triple. We kept in.
Know how to craft them. Into a team, trade them all.
Oh, I'm standing up for that one. I'm standing up.
Oh, I'm blushing.
I stood up out of my podcasting chair.
I'm blushing.
I don't know. I couldn't really even tell you what I was expecting of The Gambler 2021. I thought the opening verse really had me giggling with all the dumb crypto stuff. Like, that certainly is a 2021 type of gambling, basically pumping your NFTs to try to get other people to speculate on your crypto and cash out. That's gambling? Somehow I didn't see it being about fantasy football. That was hilarious. Great job. And
well,
like I said during the playback, I know this punch-up is not primarily about the sound of it. It's mostly about the lyrics that you found the gambler on a Discord server, which I mean, I bought that 100%. But also kudos to making this track sound like something on the country charts. It was exactly the right measure of cheesy that it sounded like. What's that song I love to hate? On the Pontoon.
For me, the true sound of country today that I've grown to hate the most is the snap track. That's just when Alex and I were talking about putting together this track. It was just one of the first things I sent to Alex was like, Alex has to have a snap track.
You have to have people snapping
has
on
to
the
have
back
a snap
beat.
Track. There's a great YouTube video about how hateable the snap track is.
Really?
By the YouTube country critic, Grady Smith. I recommend you look it up. Just about all of the terrible snap tracks in country right now. And so I sent that video to Alex, told it, like, talked about the snap track. And also, you just need those really crunchy lead licks on the electric guitar. But Alex really, really nailed putting this together for us.
Congrats on a great punch, man. I loved it. And you got some pretty juicy nuggets in here for the aspiring fantasy football player, the aspiring sports bettor. You might have the best wide receiver in the league on your fantasy team, but when he goes up against the honey badger, you're sunk. And in fact, in the lyrics, I guess you worked these up a few weeks ago and you name checked Jalen Ramsey. You called him all pro Jalen Ramsey. And now here we are. He's a Super Bowl champion.
It is dumb luck. I was just looking for a country music slant rhyme for team, landed on Jalen Ramsey, and now, flash forward a week or two, he's a Super Bowl champ. Seems very topical.
Mm-hmm. It was the magic of the rhyme. But you know who needs a lot of dumb luck?
A gambler.
Well, dare I say I learned a lot about fantasy football.
I also just want to credit the spirit, the ghost of Kenny Rogers, mm-hmm. who now, you know, himself is on the other side of the darkness. I feel like he was really channeling through me as when I did the vocals, and it just came to me in a flash that the running back wasn't going to be up on the massage table. He needed to be on the massage table. It was just like, what would Kenny Rogers say? Kenny Rogers just seems to be like the right era of man, mm-hmm. the right kind of man who'd be like, well,
you get a massage.
Really need to get a massage.
And he'd go out afterwards for some Italian food. But Kenny Rogers, bless his heart, he's gone on to break even. And we're sitting here with this final chorus. We might call it Three of a Kind. Thank you. That one was not as good, but thank you for giving me credit for trying. Every hand's a loser.
We are back to talk about our walk-in music. We took a short 5-minute break. And Evan, I have to say, I thought I had learned a lot about gambling writing this song and a lot about fantasy football writing this song. I'm not really a big fantasy football guy, as you know, someone who's beaten me many years in our family fantasy football league. But just in that 5-minute break, I lost thousands of dollars gambling in fantasy football. So I guess...
What happened during the break? Your whiteout went questionable?
Yeah, every whiteout is a loser. What can I say? Well, what's your walk-in music this week, Evan?
You know, you got to know when to walk away, Andrew, and sometimes you got to know when to walk in. And this week, I tried to think of something that I would play if I was walking into a poker match. I guess I wasn't really thinking of Saloon. Maybe I'm putting myself in like the World Series of Poker here. So I guess I'm walking into like a casino floor, but you want something that has attitude. You want something that has braggadocio and also maybe like puts a little fear in the heart of your opponent. You want them to be really second guessing their own holding and folding. Okay. So I picked this song by the Cincinnati band Foxy Shazam. I think they broke up. They're still around. That's doing different things. The singer was on that Macklemore track a couple years ago, but these guys have amazing sound. So this song is called Holy Touch. It's not on theme, but the sound of the song is on theme. Here I come, baby. Yeah! Oh, this will turn some heads when you're coming into the pork. Gotta.
Couple fun surprises in the key changes there in the intro. It was fun.
Mm-hmm. Okay, this part has absolutely nothing to do with poker or gambling. Heal me with your holy touch. But the sound of it be turning some heads when I come into the casino floor. And definitely you're going to think twice about raising against me once you've heard these rockin' strains.
You just have to hope that your opponents haven't listened to Kenny Rogers the Gambler or talked to Amir Blumenfeld about poker strategy and know that they just have to play their hand, whatever their strategy was going to be, no matter what their opponent's walk-in music is.
Maybe we'll post a link to this song, though. They have a ton of other songs that kill, but this is the one that came to mind for me and really brought the energy.
Hear me with your holy touch! Wow. This will also be a great walk-in song for a baptism.
Yes, amen. next week, let's do that. All baptism walk-in music. Okay, what's yours?
Well, I'm glad you asked. It's my walk-in music for my baptism. But wow. I also happen to be a huge Chicago Bulls fan. Ooh, a lot of suspense. A lot of suspense. A lot of suspense. The lights are down.
Oh.
Wow. Now the lights are up, but it's just two spotlights circling the sanctuary.
God, the anticipation on this track.
Land on the baptistry.
Is insane. When's it going to drop?
Here comes the preacher. He's dribbling a basketball. What is Scottie Pippen? That guy's got huge hands. He picks me up by the head.
Are we playing basketball and baptizing in this scenario?
You know, this is actually a fan suggestion on Twitter. I was talking about walk-in music, and someone brought this up as I did not know this, but this was basically the first ever sports walk-in song. It was the announcer of the Chicago Bulls was in a theater, and this was just played on the radio, and he just had a vision. He was like, what if we played this when the Bulls walked in?
What if the team walked into this?
And kind of the rest is history. So
you're literally playing the Bulls walk-in music for Bulls, your walk-in song. Yeah. This is actual walk-in music for the Chicago
but it's almost like
Bulls of the 90s.
This music was such good walk-in music that everyone was like, what if walk-in music existed? Flash forward 30 or 40 years.
They invented it.
We're doing this segment, baby. Could anyone, I feel like if you played this for most people would not know what this song was. A few people would know it was by the Alan Parsons Project. But I think many more people would be like, when I hear this song, I think of Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen just dunking people in a baptistry.
Wow. So it really is like a baptism when you think of how many people worship at the House of Jordan. That was great. It's well, walk-in music as a history lesson of walk-in music.
I say this every week, but how can I beat that? How can I top Michael Jordan's walk-in music for my future walk-in music?
Yeah, so our walk-ins this week and our recommendations to you, dear listeners, are Holy Touch by Foxy Shazam and Sirius, like the star, not the attitude, by the Alan Parsons Project. That's it for our show. I'm Evan Gregory. You can follow me at GetSomeEvan.
I'm Andrew Gregory. You can follow me at AroseGregory. And I want to say, Evan, listening back to my punch-up, there's one thing that I realized my punch-up was lacking.
I hope you don't have any regrets. I mean, this song was severely punched.
It was. I'm trying not to brag. I was very pleased with it, how it came out. And it's deep dive in fantasy football. Honestly, I'm glad I watched Moneyball in the last week. That was just a coincidence, but it really helped me think about sabermetrics in sports. But the one thing it was kind of missing was the country choir, the saloon choir. I didn't have time to put together the saloon choir for it. And you and I are relaunching the Punch Up the Jam Patreon. Evan, you and I, let's put together the country choir. Let's upload this track to Patreon. Every week we're going to upload the punch-ups to Patreon, but this one is going to be a special one because we're going to add the country choir.
A bonus of a punched-up punch. I didn't know where you're going with that, honestly. I thought you were going, when you said we didn't do a choir, the country choir, all the backup singers, those delicious, delicious backup singers, I thought you were going to crowdsource it. I thought you were going to say, send us in your recordings and we'll put you in, and I'm not opposed to that.
No, I want to come in here and just go, no wind to craft them. No when to draft them. No do. So thank you all so much. We're beyond punching up the jam. Now we're going to be punching up the punches of the jam. I'm just not sure how much deeper we can go, but we will see you guys back next week for another episode of
Punch Up
the Jam!
Let's punch it.
The jam, punch it up, get the party going, punch up the jam, punch it up,
punch it!
That was a HeadGum Original.